Father, I thank you for your words. I thank you that you have given us an opportunity to come together, to connect with fellow believers, to have the wonderful opportunity to do that, God. And I thank you so much for this path that you are taking us on, God, of growth and maturity. Father, I pray that it is not a burden to us. I pray that we don't do it begrudgingly, God, but we do it with overwhelming thankfulness and humility and awe that you have allowed us to get to know you and that you are inside us, working on us and changing us, God. So I thank you so much for that privilege. Amen. So a few of you guys know that I got a new job about a year ago. So it's actually the exact same job, same responsibilities. I work with the same people. It's just it went from being kind of transient to something that is way, way more consistent. And I got some better benefits too. But one of the perks or downsides, depending upon how you want to view it, of that job is that now I have to go on business trips. And I don't have to go on many, but I went on my first one just a couple of months ago. And something that was really interesting. So I'm really interested in food, really interested in cooking and flavor perception and food science, and I've gotten into chefs and restaurants and kind of that whole world. And so when I was in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport, and I'm walking, you know, they have like stores everywhere. They have little like Popeyes, and they have different emporiums where you can get shoes and get your shoes shined and all that stuff. And I was walking past one, and as I walked by, I glanced over, and I saw standing there looking at some toys. It was like Babo's Toy Emporium. I saw Jose Andres. I saw the Jose Andres. So just quick, like, who's heard of him? I mean, my wife has, no one else. So it turns out that no one else in the entire Dallas-Fort Worth airport has heard of him either, because he was just walking around. But he's, in the world of food, he's a big deal. He's actually being sued right now for about $10 million because of breach of contract. It's kind of a funny story. But he is a really big deal, and his name and his image has come up so many times. He has done all of these things, right? And so I thought, you know, I couldn't even really establish that it was him, because for me it was like seeing Tom Cruise or Samuel L. Jackson or Brad Pitt or someone hugely famous, and I just kind of stood there in the airport and stared at him for a while, trying to discover whether or not that was actually him or not, because he was like, I mean, it was like a big, big deal for me. I was too nervous to approach him then, but I thought, okay, so if he is on my flight, because where I was going to Washington, D.C., and he has this huge restaurant in Washington, D.C., if he is on my flight, I know that it's him. And I actually tried to get a reservation at his restaurant that he has there, but it's a 3-month waiting period, and it's $300 a plate. So I did not do that. I ended up actually going to Walmart and buying a can of peanuts, and I saved, you know, $297. But he was on my flight. It was in first class. And so after, I thought, okay, if he's on that flight, I'm going to go up to him afterwards. I'm going to get an autograph. So the flight happened. I went up to him afterwards. He was a really nice guy. He signed my, I didn't have anything to sign, so I took one of those magazines out of the airport, out of the seat that was in front of me, and I took that, and he signed that. So he signed that, and then he basically gave me a pat on the shoulder, indicating, you know, this has been great meeting you, but our time is done, and you need to get out of my way. And so I got out of his way, and so our time was done. The thing that really, I was left with after that experience was what happened on that flight right before I asked him for the autograph. So there's two things that was going through my mind. One was that I was really excited, and the other was I was really nervous. And I think that's kind of normal. You know, if you're going to kind of meet a celebrity, you'd get those. But in thinking about why I was nervous and why I was excited, this is what it was. I was excited because here's this guy that has been trained by the most celebrated chef in the world. He has all these restaurants. He's been on all these famous talk shows. He has a PBS cooking show. He has this charity set up for helping feed the world. He's done all these amazing things. And so I was excited because now, if someone played back that person's, Jose Andres' entire life, I was going to be part of that legacy. So I was kind of like interjecting myself into this amazing life. And I was nervous because I wasn't sure how that was going to go. I wasn't entirely confident that maybe I wasn't worthy enough to be part of this amazing celebrated life. And I thought I'd be rejected. Who knows what's going to happen? And both of those ideas boil down to what we're going to be talking about today. Contentment. Clearly, I wasn't content. Because for one, that excitement, that kind of indicates, well, my life isn't really all that great. And so I was excited about being part of this bigger, greater life. Okay? And I was nervous because, well, apparently I have self-worth issues, and I was kind of nervous, and I just wasn't sure if I was worthy of that kind of life. Our text for today comes from Philippians 4, 10 through 14. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you did not have an opportunity to show it. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned. This is the key part, that I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. Yet, it was good of you to share in my troubles. So the big thing is that contentment is obtainable, and that it is worth our time. That's kind of what I get out of this text. And so when I'm talking about contentment, let's clarify kind of a definition first. A lot of times you can kind of think of, if someone's content, it means that they're boring, that they're settling for something. If they're content, oh, I'm just content, it's like, oh, so you didn't want to be the CEO of this major corporation. You're just fine being this lowly person. You have no aspirations in life. Contentment is amazing. Contentment is the very thing that I have devoted my whole life to becoming. This is what I mean by contentment. We all have desires, yearnings, cravings, and when they are not satisfied, we are not content. If they are satisfied, we are content. It's kind of like, if you think about it like a fire, that desires and yearnings and cravings are like this fire that's just burning on the ground. Satisfaction is when we take some water and we put that fire out. If we don't have satisfaction, it means that fire just keeps going and going. And so it's burning inside us, and we ideally just want to put that desire out. So when I'm talking about contentment, it's about not having the desires. And it's not necessarily just that, it's about having desires satisfied. That's a key point. We're at all sorts of different levels of contentment. Sometimes we're content with the money that we have, we're content with the time that we have, we're content with a number of things. We're content with our friends. That just means that we don't have desire burning inside us, and that we are actually content, okay? So Jesus was really the only one who was perfectly content. He didn't have those desires, and those desires that did come up, they were quenched immediately. Paul was mostly content. So here it says that he was content in any and every situation. And for the most part, I think that's true. I guess here's the thing. If it's kind of like food, if you imagine all of your desire kind of as your hunger, and you have, let's say you have, like Paul, for example, he had 3 square meals a day as far as his overwhelming contentment that he had. So he had fires, he had hunger, and that he got food throughout his day from God, so to speak, that God satisfies those desires. And if he just had those 3 meals a day, he would have been totally fine. But it's kind of like this gift that he was talking about to the Philippians. He said that they didn't have this opportunity to give a gift, and then finally they got this gift to him. And at the very end he said, man, it was good of you to give me that gift. And so it was kind of like he has those 3 square meals a day. He's fine. He's satisfied. He's content. But man, someone just offers him some dessert. Someone offers him an ice cream Snickers bar. And all of a sudden it's like, you know what? That would be good. I don't need it. I don't really need it. I'm fine. I got enough food and comfort and satisfaction from God. But I appreciate that. So thank you for that. I think Jesus wouldn't have even cared. I think his contentment level was so high that he wouldn't have even phased to mention that was a good thing. And I say that because of this. So there was the woman at the well, if you guys remember that story, that Jesus went up to a woman about who was at a well. He told her basically her whole life. And then she went away, told the other people about, there's this guy, he told me my whole life, and then she brought the whole people. Around that time, Jesus' disciples came and said, they were talking about something completely different. They said, meanwhile, his disciples urged him, Rabbi, eat something. But he said to them, I have food to eat that you know nothing about. And then the disciples said to each other, could someone have brought him food? And Jesus said, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. So Jesus had such amazing food that he got from God that any kind of offer, any kind of something that would come from this world wouldn't tantalize him. Wouldn't say, you know what? For me, I would say a Snickers bar would sound good right about now. For Jesus, that Snickers bar paled in comparison to the food that he was used to, and so it didn't do anything for him. And it was because he didn't have that desire that wriggled up inside of him. I would say about me, I am mostly content. As long as 2 things are satisfied. 1, all the stuff that I have right now, I don't lose. So I have all this stuff, and I'm just really just trying to, you know, just kind of protect it, I guess. So that none of it goes away. Because if something goes away, if I lose my family, or I lose my job, or I lose my house, it would affect me. It would affect me. So that's one condition. I have to make sure that all the stuff that I have, I don't lose. The other is that I don't think anything's better. So yesterday we told our son, he's 4 years old, we told him about a party that he was going to go to today. And it's a birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese. And he was totally fine. He was totally fine. But now we said, oh, you know, you're going to a party at Chuck E. Cheese tomorrow. And I thought he would say, oh, okay, that sounds good. But now it's become like every couple minutes, Dad, we need to call Chuck E. Cheese and let them know that they can't close without us being there. And it's like every couple minutes, it's like, Dad, did you call Chuck E. Cheese yet? Or did you tell some? We're not going to be late. We're not going to be late to Chuck E. Cheese. And it's like, oh my goodness. So all of a sudden, he went from being totally content and fine to now all of a sudden, there's like this desire that's boiled up inside him, and he's like fearful of it not happening, and he wants, I mean, ideally he wants that to be satisfied, so he's making sure that desire gets satisfied. we are never going to tell him about a party again. And that's what we've learned. Luxury is a drug. Man, you know, I used to love my house, but then I saw this house. And man, my house is lame in comparison now. All of a sudden, seeing that stuff, it sparks again, you know, all of these desires. And the thing is that is exactly what sin does. Sin plays upon our desires. Here it says in Romans 7:8, "But sin, seizing the opportunity afforded by the commandment, produced in me every kind of coveting. For apart from the law, sin is dead." And so if sin were a person, this is kind of how it would go. Sin would approach you and say, "So I see that you have a desire. You know what? I can help you. I can help you get rid of that desire. I have a bunch of different paths. I have a bunch of different ideas. Man, we can work together and your desire can be satisfied. The only thing that I would suggest you not do is don't have anything to do with God as far as part of your answer, okay, for your solution to getting away from desire. Because it's not really relevant anymore. The Bible's old school, and probably God doesn't even exist. But I think you're a smart guy, and so you probably already know that. If you just obey that simple little rule, you and I are going to get along just fine." That's what sin does, is it sets up this idea of anything but God can be used to satisfy that desire. Man. But Jesus was content. In the desert, when those desires, when sin came a-knocking, so to speak, he didn't fall to it because because those desires were quenched by God. And the thing with being involved in sin is that sin becomes your master. So it's not just you that it's in control of. It's all the stuff that you are in control of as well. So all of your resources, all of your time, all your energy, all your money becomes controlled under sin as opposed to where it should be. And so a wonderful consequence of being content is that your resources are now free. All of the resources that you would have normally used to satisfy your desires now can be free because they're already satisfied by God. So for example, let's say that you were sick. Anybody ever been sick before? I've been sick before. Has it ever been so sick that it has completely consumed your life, that you think about it all the time, it takes up your money, it takes up your resources, it takes up your time, and it completely flattens you to the point where it's like everything else in your life is put on hold, and it's like you have to deal with that sickness. Now imagine that you're not sick anymore. Maybe that's been a chronic thing. Maybe that's been something that's lasted a long time, and it's consumed your life. And now all of a sudden, you're not sick anymore. And all of these resources are now available. So now it's like, wow, you have a whole bunch of money that you never really had access to in the first place because all of that was devoted to sickness. You have time, you have thoughts, you have all these things, you have all these resources that we have been provided that is now free because it was being taken care of by that sickness. If we can learn to not take our resources and use them to satisfy those desires and let God satisfy those desires, all of those resources can now be used for something else. Some examples of contentment sickness, some of the kind of the sicknesses that contentment can bring, image, how much time, energy is spent on image, our worth, our purpose, our survival. God says he'll take care of all those things for us. If somebody cuts in front of you, a typical situation would be maybe we'd get mad, maybe we'd get frustrated. Wouldn't it be awesome if we just didn't care? If someone makes fun of us or mocks us or is verbally abusive to us in some way, we might get sad, We might get frustrated. We might say, I don't care what you think. Which, obviously, they do care what you think. They wouldn't have that kind of attitude. But wouldn't it be better if we just didn't care? Man, this is the idea behind what Jesus said. In Matthew 5, it says, "And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go a mile, go with them too. Give to the one who asks you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." You know why? How can you do that? Because you don't care. If someone says, I want $100, here you go. I don't care because I don't use my resources anymore to satisfy my desires. God satisfies my desires, and all those resources are up for grab. Man, that's amazing. Man, those ideas changed my life. They're still changing it. So we don't have to buy a new truck. We don't have to have a certain person in our life. We don't have to have a certain situation. This is the overwhelming joy of contentment, and it's learnable. Paul said it's learnable. This is up for grabs for anyone who follows Christ, because it's not available for those who don't follow Christ, because they don't have something to satisfy those desires. Our desires have to be satisfied. And that's what God does. Man, it's exciting so much to see growth. Whenever I play a board game, typically I am really mad. I'm frustrated if I lose. I get this weird competitive spirit. You can ask my wife. And so a lot of times we haven't played board games. She loves board games. And a lot of times she'll win. But I've noticed over the course of the past 10 years, I don't get as frustrated anymore. Man, I think that's so encouraging that there's growth that happens because of what God has done. Man. And it can be learned. But something has to be different. In order for change to happen, something has to change. In order for change to happen, something has to change. If you have always thought of yourself as kind of lame, or maybe you're just an angry person, or maybe you just think you're all that, maybe you're just incredibly arrogant, in order for that to change, if you've been thinking that way for decades, something has to change. There's going to have to be this major overhaul in your life, either a series of like small little events or a couple huge ones that completely rethink the way that you're supposed to. One thing that I found to help do that is experiences. I spent a summer in New Orleans, and I've talked about that summer before. It was really impactful for my life. That was where I went to the Southern Baptist place. Yeah. Yeah, I felt so loved when I went to that church. It was phenomenal. But we went down there to help with Katrina stuff. There was flooding, there was damage, and so we'd go to houses and we'd kind of gut them out and help the homeowners kind of rebuild a little bit of their life and share the gospel at the same time. There was one story in particular that I remember, one house, and we called her the doll lady. And so this lady, she had hundreds, if not thousands of dollars tied up in dolls, just dolls, in their original packaging, apparently like all lined up all around her house. And she had clippings of the royal family that she would put in binders. And I remember there was this one room that from the floor to the ceiling in this entire closet was binder, 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 binder. You opened up the binders, and it was just full of clippings about, you know, Princess Diana and Fergie and the Queen Mother and the whole thing. It was like 50 different binders of the royal family. And in addition to that, she had all of these dolls. Needless to say, the whole house was completely trashed. Everything was gone. The binders were absolutely destroyed and faded and all like melded together, and there were dolls everywhere. The owner didn't want to throw away the dolls. She wanted to take, her request for the house was to take all of the dolls and put them on the front lawn spread out of her yard so that later she could go and she could walk through them and see if there were any that were salvageable, just in case there were. And man, I remember thinking, lady, just let it go. I mean, man, it's you have freedom now. It's totally gone. And I thought something else. I thought, okay, what about my life? What are the dolls in my life? What if I just lost everything? How would I do as far as letting it go? Are you okay? Man, God said that he'll take care of us during that time, but man, that was a big deal. I thought, just of those two, of here I'm judging this lady, but man, I have dolls in my own life that I'm sure. And now I feel like I'm married, I have kids, I have a car, I have a house. I didn't have any of those things when I was dealing with the lady. I had like a bag of clothes, a computer, and a guitar. That's all I had. But man, still, if I lost those, that would be a big thing. What about health? What if I lost my health? How would I do? And so using that experience, it's like, man, God, you are faithful and you are going to get me through whatever situation comes. And so this situation I am going to use as an opportunity to let you fuel and satisfy my desires and let go a little bit more of this world. I have a tendency to forget things a lot, which is a benefit and a curse, depending upon how it's used. But I forget a lot of experiences. And so it's really important for me to take those experiences and channel them into some kind of habit or practice before that experience just completely disappears. And whenever I think about daily habits, the story that comes to mind is Jim Bishop. So Jim Bishop is a guy up in Colorado, and he got a piece of land when he was 15. And he got that land kind of cleared up, and he had some rocks, and so he kind of etched out this foundation on the ground, and he just would kind of put some rocks along that kind of perimeter that he had etched out, and it was like this big, massive thing. And so every day, he just went and he worked on that area, and he'd put a few more rocks, and then he eventually got some concrete, and he started putting those rocks together with the intention of building a castle. So every day, he's been doing this for around 40, 50 years now. His castle is hundreds of meters tall. It has a fire-breathing dragon, stained glass window, people have weddings in there, and it's primarily just been done for him. And so I think, man, what castles am I building in my life? What habits are being formed? Man, it was one guy who was just working every day on this castle. And it's like, you know, thousands of tons of rock and steel and this massive, massive thing. If you guys have an opportunity, go check it out online. It's really impressive of what one guy has done a little bit every day for decades. What are our castles that we're building? I want to point out that this is not legalism. This is not just some kind of set of rules of, you know, this, 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 and this, and God will be pleased. This is basically all just kind of on us. So Paul even talks about this. He says in Colossians, do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. These rules, which have to do with things which are all destined to perish based on merely human commands and teachings, such regulations indeed have an appearance of wisdom with their self-imposed worship, their false humility, their harsh treatment of the body, but they lack any value in restraining sensual indulgence. So the idea here is that what we're doing is our goal is to have those desires satisfied, that that God pours water on those desires. It's not that we're supposed to walk away from the fire. And further and further and further. That's Buddhism. That's what Buddhism does. It just walks away from the desire, and then we're done with it. The thing is that the fire is still there. Living life to the fullest is that those desires are satisfied by God. That's the beauty of what God does that is unique, that nothing else can do, because nothing else is God. And understand that this is ultimately all our call. You know, like, when I hear something that's good, there's been so many opportunities that I've missed in my life because this is my thought track. I go through, you know, I hear something phenomenal, and I hear, you know what, man, you made some excellent points. And I have decided to ignore them and not do anything associated with change at all. And if that is the habit, which it is a lot of times for me, if that's the habit, then whenever you hear something, you think, oh, that doesn't apply to me. Because, you know, that one thing that I heard before, I didn't do that, and it didn't work. And so, because you're saying something that's good and profound and new, I've just decided to ignore you as well. Because, obviously, when I don't do it, it doesn't work. And I need to retrain that idea of there's a rich bounty in Scripture that your whole life can change. And there's so much freedom that can happen because of this truth of God does satisfy our desires. And so our goal is that we worship God and that we don't worship the world. So those two ideas that we had at the beginning, one was that the stuff we have doesn't change, and that there is nothing better. Both of those, God satisfies. The world doesn't satisfy those. God satisfies those. Our relationship with God is awesome, eternal, and never going to end. And there is nothing better than God. So that God is like a hose of water that is poured on our desires. We spend so much of our resources gathering together, thinking about it, and getting like little cups, little drops of water that we can take over to our fire and dump it out. And just a little bit later, that desire will burn again, and it will flare up again. But with God, it's a hose. It's just this constant pouring of water. That's the secret that Paul learned, is that God is the one that satisfies those desires. Man, to experience true satisfaction, and that it is something that can be learned. That's not just attainable for, you know, super awesomes. It's attainable to anyone that seeks God and gets that satisfaction from Him. Yeah, amen. Father, I thank you that you are good and you are faithful. Father, thank you so much for your word. Father, I thank you that you are a hose that we can rely on. God, you're the one that we can seek. And amen. We'll close with just this one verse, and then the band's going to come up. Oh, right, they're already here. So our theme throughout this entire series of Philemon has come from chapter 3. And it's Philemon 3, 10 and 11. I want to know Christ, yes, to know the power of his resurrection, and participate in his suffering, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. Man, and that completely captures what we're talking about of, man, I want to know Christ and everything about him because I have desires, and I know that using my resources to quench that fire of desire isn't going to work, and God, I need you so badly to take care of this mess for me. Amen.